Thank you guys so much for inviting me to come here and speak. I am a firm believer that God will put you exactly where you're supposed to be when you're supposed to be there. So I know there is a reason for me to be here. So what I love about that song, and what I love about what John said was they call it altar, because I have definitely been altered. I have been altered in so many ways, and I have been broken, and I have been fixed. But what I love about all that is that God continues to fix me. And what I love is he continues to break me. And when he breaks me, it's to, so he can continue to build me. Because if you know God like I know God, then that sometimes you can't, you want him to break you. Because sometimes when we start drifting away from God just a little bit, or we get stagnant in our walk or our recovery or anything, God likes to, he likes to, you know, sit us down. He likes to break us so that we'll continue. Because I don't know about y'all, but if I'm not broken, if I'm not yearning for the Lord, then I feel like I'm lost. Because so when I'm broken, that's when I feel like I am the closest to God, because I'm on my knees more, I'm in my word more, and I know that when I come out of it, God has got something greater for me on the other side of it. And that's one thing that I love about this, that I love that God has taught me, because I used to run. I used to try to avoid it in the face of fear or any kind of adversity. And the Lord has taught me, and you will hear that in my story. One thing that I love the most is God's word. And I love how God has taught me his word. And now you'll hear about that in just a minute, how he really taught me his word. But one of my most favorite things is to open up God's word and find myself in God's word. And that is how, and I have a goal to one day to get up here and tell my testimony and only tell it through God's word. So tell you the stories, how I see myself in God's word. I want you to know my testimony just by me telling you that. And I'm going to give you just a couple of examples of that tonight, of how I see myself in God's word. Before I tell you my testimony here on this earth, I want to tell you how God has showed me my testimony in his word. And I'm going to start with the woman with the issue of blood. The woman with the issue of blood who bled on the inside. For 12 years, she bled. I bled on the inside. So I was just like that woman with the issue of blood. In Mark chapter 5, it talks about how the woman, how this woman pushed through a crowd, how Jesus was standing in the middle of the crowd, and how this woman had to push herself through a crowd, but she had her eyes on Jesus the whole time. But it was because it was the perseverance, it was the persistence that this woman took to get to Jesus. It was because she thought. Because she thought, if I could just get to Jesus, that I would be healed. And I will never forget the moment when I first saw a light in these two ladies. And I thought, if I could just get to Jesus, then I could have exactly what they have. If I could just get to Jesus, then I would be healed. And then there's the man in John chapter 5 who was at the pool, the healing at the pool, the man who was paralyzed for 38 years. Because I, too, was paralyzed for many, many years. And no, I wasn't physically paralyzed, but it felt like I was, because I was paralyzed by an addiction. I was paralyzed by an addiction that kept me from living, that kept me from doing anything else. And just like this man, it says he sat there day after day. And then Jesus asked him, "Do you want to get well?" And what was his response? "No one would help me. No one would help me." Do you know why that no one would help me? I used to think the same thing. If I could just find one person that would just save me. If I could just find one person that would help me, that would take me off the streets, that would do, because that's how my mind thought. And you know, and no one would help me, because no one could help me. And it's just like the man with at the pool who was paralyzed. No one could help him, because no one was Jesus. It took Jesus. And then there's the Samaritan woman, the woman at the well, and how this woman walked day after day back and forth down this long dirt road in the midst of the heat, and how she suffered. But she did this because of her shame and her guilt, and how she walked alone because she was so ashamed of who she was and because of her past. And that's exactly what I did. But you know what? The whole time that this woman was walking this road with that shame and that guilt, what she didn't know is Jesus was coming for her. And that's the same thing with me. I walked that road for many, many years, and the one thing I never knew is he was coming for me the whole time. Now, John chapter 9 talks about as I tell you my story, this is what I want you to see most importantly in my story, is in John chapter 9, it talks about a blind man and how the Jesus asked the blind man's, or no, the disciple asked Jesus, said, "Rabbi, who sinned, this man or his parents, so that he was born blind?" And this is the part I want you to get. He said, "No one sinned that this man, but it happened so that the works of God might be displayed in him." And that's my story. I believe wholeheartedly in my story that everything that I've walked through is because so that God could be glorified through my story, so that I could stand here today and you could see God in my story. That's why it happened. So I have been clean and sober since November 5th, 2015. And I have been walking with the Lord since November the 15th of 2015. I did graduate the drug court program. I have been off of drug court now for, I think it's 4 or 5 years. It's 4 or 5 years. Anyway, it's a long time. So that is one of my proud moments. But that is what it used to change my life. I wish there was drug court participants here, because the one thing that I would tell them is that you have a choice. You know, you can choose to ride the thing out. You can choose to fail, or you can choose to change your life. And God gave me that opportunity. I felt like God had given me that opportunity, and I took it and I ran with it. And I used that structure to, in order to change my life. So I grew up in and out of foster homes. I'm not going to tell you a whole lot about that part of my life, about my youth, but I will tell you that I grew up in and out of foster homes. My grandmother foster, she got me out. I got pregnant at the age of 16 years old, and I had my first child. Married and pregnant at 16, because that marriage was the right thing to do. Back then, that's what you did when you got pregnant. You got married. And so that lasted only a couple of years. I had my son, Skylar. And so a couple years down the road, I'm 18 years old, and I go to the bar for the very first time. And true story, met my next future ex-husband, and that very night, right after I left my husband. And that was the night I found my love for alcohol. And I loved the way that it made me feel. I loved how it made me beautiful. It made me strong. It filled all those voids that I had been. It made me feel loved, because I had felt like I was searching for love. And I felt like I searched for love my whole life until I found the love of Jesus. Because that's what we do, because we are really empty. We search this world for so many things, man. Throughout our lives. And the only thing that can fill that void is Jesus. And so I met my next future ex-husband, ended up getting pregnant, and with my second child, Haley, got married again. And then a couple years later, I got pregnant with my third child, Zoe. So I have three children, Skylar, Haley, and Zoe. And my addiction started between my two daughters. And when I had, between the birth of both of my daughters, I can't tell you exactly when. I know I can tell you the night I told you the night I found my love for alcohol. That is not when my addiction began, but that is when my love for alcohol was founded. Because you know what we do as drug addicts or whatever, when our journey begins with this, we are only choosing to have fun. We're choosing to fill the void that makes us feel. We're choosing to have a good time, to get high with our friends, to, you know, drink until we no longer have a choice. And that's how it was for me. I drank, and then I found my love for alcohol. Then I found my love for opiates. My opiates, that came between my two daughters, of having my two daughters. And then it got to where I could not get my kids to school every day. I woke up one day and I could not get my kids to school. So there I am, right? Boom, I'm addicted. So then it was alcohol and opiates. And then from opiates, alcohol to opiates. And then I thought I had found my miracle drug, which was Suboxone. So, and that would, shortly after that, that would become just as big of an issue as everything else, because it's just as much a drug as anything else. So then after the Suboxone, because that's what happens, our addiction grows. It grows. You know, I don't care what anybody says. When you do one thing, it's eventually you're going to get to this point and it's going to grow. You're going to want something else to change the way you feel, because that's what we're seeking. We are seeking to change the way that we feel. And so eventually it wasn't enough. This wasn't getting me as much as I needed to get up. So I would find, you know, so then my son was ADHD. Terribly ADHD. And for years, he had been on medication, But he wasn't on that one medication that got everybody high. So I made it a point to get him into a doctor that would give him Adderall. And when they give him that Adderall, it was over. My son no longer took his medication, and he needed his medication because I took it for him. So then I swore I would never do crystal meth because I had two sisters from that childhood I talk about, from in and out of foster home. I had two sisters that both lost their lives, their whole families and everything due to crystal methamphetamine. So I seen what it did. And of course, I swore I would never touch it. I would never do it. And everything I said I'd never do, I've done. So because eventually it was not enough. It was just not enough, and you know, constantly searching. So then I turned to crystal methamphetamines. So my husband at this time, he knew the whole time pretty much what was going on. But I hid it well for a while. But he finally had enough. And so we had separated, and he actually let the kids come live with me. And I, as soon as that happened, I knew right then, freedom. That was my freedom point. I didn't have to answer to him anymore. You know, I could do what I want. And so then it was a party at my house every night, drunk. Men in and out of my house, you know, just living the life, the party life, because that's what I knew. It would be on Easter of 2009 that at this point I had been letting men cook dope in my house with my children. And of course, not in the same room, but still in the same house as my children. And, Easter 2009, my, girls' father came and got them for a visit and did not bring them home. Now, I will tell you that throughout my addiction period, this was years and years and years ago. So I suffered for years with this addiction because it became an addiction so early on that it became a miserable life, very early on. But I can remember standing in front of a mirror with a pill in my hand and saying I would quit tomorrow, and tomorrow never came because I just could not quit. I never thought I would be able to quit drinking alcohol. And the only reason that I seen that I quit alcohol was because of the crystal methamphetamine, because it just interacted. It just didn't go. I like to be up more than I did down. So that's how I quit drinking alcohol. And I thought I had accomplished something by quitting drinking alcohol. But little did I know that my whole life would be taken from me. When he came and got my girls on Easter weekend and did not bring them home, I knew right then, like, if I could have ever quit, it would have been in that moment. Because I knew I was helpless, but I knew there was nothing that I could do because I did not know how to quit. I had made many attempts to quit, and I knew that I couldn't quit. And I didn't have anybody to really help me. I didn't have anybody to help me quit, or I didn't know anything about treatment. I didn't know anything about resources. So, he kept my girls from me for about 2 months, no contact or absolutely nothing. But I still had my little boy because he had a different father. So I had my little boy. And right when this happened, when he took my girls, I got an eviction notice. My lights got cut off. I got an eviction notice. My car broke down on the side of the road, too. It was just like that. Boom, boom, boom. Lost everything just like that. No place to live. No car. Nothing. And so here I was with this little boy going from one motel to the next motel, doing whatever I had to do to get us a place to stay at night. And his father also seen what was taking place from a distance and asked me, could he come and live with him? We had always had a great relationship. Of course, I said no, because I swore I would never willingly let my kids go. And because I always had that fear inside. I always had that fear because I seen what it did to my sisters. I always had that fear of losing my children. And so I said no, and then it got to a point where I had to say yes because I was not being able to. We had always had this great relationship, and I never thought it would be an issue. So we went. We had the papers drawn up. We just swapped roles. He had full custody, and I had joint custody. That's how it was supposed to go. And so sure enough, my son went to live with his father. But what I didn't know is that when he went to live with his father, that would be the last time I would see him. In the meantime, my girl's father decides to call me and says, if I will give him a divorce and give him full custody, that he will bring the girls back. And so I agreed to do that because I just wanted him to bring my girls back. And I did not know how to quit using drugs to do anything different. So so that's what we did. And I would get to see the girls. So every week, because I didn't have a license or a home or a car or any of that, we would agree to meet every week for me to play with the girls. And we would meet at the park. And this went on for several weeks that I would meet them at the park and we would play until one day I met them at the park to play. And here come the police coming for me. And while I was there playing with my children, and I heard someone say, the police is on the way. You got a warrant out for your arrest. And they took my kids. And my little girl was screaming at the top of her lungs, I don't want my mommy to go to jail. No, mommy. No, mommy. I don't want my mommy to go to jail. And there was nothing I could do but stand there and hold her. I tried to run, but she was screaming. And I went back and I just held my little girl in my arms until they took her from me and they left. And that would be the last time that I would see my two daughters. Now, at this point, I knew that I had lost my kids. And I just wanted to not use. I just wanted to get better. But here I am, was stuck, and I didn't have any. I had nothing. I had no hope. I had no one to help me. I had nothing but a drug addiction that I did not know what to do with, except for to feed it. Because that's how I survived. Because at this point in my addiction, I'm only surviving. I'm not even getting high anymore. I'm only getting up every day and trying to live a life, homeless and all. So for the next 6.5 years, I lived homeless without a place of my own to stay. I stayed at this dope house, to that dope house, wherever I could, I did whatever I had to do to get whatever I had to get. And that's how it went on for years, 6.5 years. That's what happened. No vehicle, nothing. Had nothing. There were times where all of my stuff were stolen. And day after day, I would look in that mirror, standing in that dope house, looking in that mirror. This one particular dope house I stayed in, I can still see myself standing there and looking in that mirror and crying and thinking that I would never find my way out. Because I had almost accepted that that's where I was going to be for the rest of my life. Because I did not know how to quit. And I didn't have anybody to help me quit. I had no clue, but there was this, what they call a mustard seed. I would call it a mustard seed because it was such a little seed of hope that one day I would just quit. Just one day. I didn't know how it would come, but just one day maybe I would just quit. But I can tell you this, not one day went by that I did not want my kids, that I did not love my kids. One thing that makes me so mad is when people say if she loved her kids, she would quit, because they have no idea. Because I loved my kids. I love my kids with my whole heart and my whole soul. And I would have done anything for them. I just did not know how to quit using drugs. And so within this period of time, I was arrested 17 times. And I ended up on drug court. And so when the man came in to tell me that I was going to be on drug court, I literally was numb from head to toe. And because how would I not use? How would I do this? The judge had agreed to give me probation the day before. Probation, right? I was going to be good. I could go home and still use and just, I could play the field. And so that was my idea. Okay, I can do this. So, but sure enough, when I got to court, it was God. It was all God, because God knew that I would not make it on a probation. And then, so then they tried to offer me house arrest. God knew I wouldn't make it on house arrest. And then there was no other option on that. They took it all off the table. They said, no, you're getting drug court. And so I had to take drug court, and I was scared to death, literally scared to death, shaken. And when he walked out of the room, all I know is I ask the God that I was mad at, the God that took away my kids, the God that made me a drug addict, the God that let me be homeless for 6.5 years, The God that let me be an alcoholic. The God that did all these bad things to me. And I had begged him to fix it, right? Because God could fix it. Because he's God, right? And if he wanted to, he could have fixed it. And God would not fix it for me. And that's how I felt about him. But in this moment, I asked God to help me. And it, you know, we've prayed 1,000 911 prayers in our days. I prayed 1,000 911, but this was not a 911 prayer. This was a prayer of sincerity. God, I need you to help me because I can't do this, but I want to do this. I knew that I wanted to get better. And I knew, but I also knew the only place I had to go when I left there was a dope house because I didn't have anybody else. Nobody. And whenever he walked, and whenever I, after that, I just remember saying out loud, because I kind of got a little excited. And I said, this is, Laura, this is your chance. Laura, this is your chance. And I knew that I was going to try. Now, I wish that I could tell you that I never had a desire after that. But what I can tell you is when I walked out them doors, though, God had taken my DTs. I didn't have not one DT when I walked out. And any other time I had ever walked out of that place, I was covered with withdrawals and just had to have it right then. But I did not have the first DT. I did have a desire. Yes, I did have a desire. And don't think my head wasn't spinning. How could I use? How could I beat this? Because that's, I wasn't quite, you know, I just knew I wanted to get better and this was going to be my chance, but I didn't know how I was going to do it. So y'all, when I left there, I went back to that dope house because that's the only place I had to go. And I lived in that dope house sober, clean and sober. And I remember being so excited every day that would pass by that I did not use. I just remember being so excited that I did not use. And I, of course, I tried to stay away from everybody else in the dope house. I would try to stay in my own room with my, I hated loud music, but at this point I loved it, because it drowned everything else out. And so I did not know how I was going to make all the meetings for drug court. I did not know how I was going to make it to the phone calls to drug court every day. I did not know how I was going to get there to test. I didn't. But the Lord just opens the doors and he just provides if we're willing to take each step. So while I was in that jail, those 2 weeks, that's when two ladies came. And that's when I seen the light of Jesus, just like the woman with the issue of blood, when she saw. And she said, if I could just get to him. I saw these two ladies that spoke. They came and told their story. And I knew that if I could just get to the Jesus that they knew, that I might do this, you know, that I could do this. And so when I got out, the Sunday rolls around and I'm trying to get to the church that these ladies came from. And I could not find a ride living in the dope house. It was really hard to find a ride to church. But I finally got a hold of this lady and she said, what are you doing? I said, I'm trying to get a ride to North Star Church. And she said, well, I'm not going to North Star, but I'm going to Cross Point. It's right down the road. I can come pick you up. I said, that'll work. Because you got to be willing to do something. You got to be willing to do whatever it takes. And so I went to this church and I knew right then when I walked in that day that I was where I was supposed to be on that day. And before I left that church, I remember going to that altar and holding my hands out and in a moment of surrender. Because I had surrendered the drugs and alcohol days before. I didn't want to use or drink. But until you're ready to surrender everything, until you're ready to surrender everything, nothing's going to change. And I knew right in that moment that I just needed to, I surrendered myself. I surrendered everything to God. And that was my moment. That was my moment when he just came down and he picked me up. That was my moment that I was altered. That was the beginning of my alteration. You know, he just picked me up and I knew that I was going to do everything I could. And I remember saying to God, I don't know if I can hold up to my end of the deal. You know, I did not know what was going to happen when I walked out of that church that day. Had no idea, but I knew that I was going to give it my best shot. And I knew that I had to go back to that dope house still when I left church that day. But our God has a good sense of humor. Because that day I went back to that dope house and I ended up driving somebody's car to the store and I went to jail. There was dope in the glove box. I did not have a driver's license. Here I am on drug court for the first 11 days or 7 days. I was sober 11 days on drug court for like 6 or 7 days. And I'm like, I thought I was going to prison. And But it was all God. It was all part of God's plan and how he was trying to move me from the dope house, because you have to change your people, places, and things. And God was not trying to punish me. God was trying to teach me that I had to change my people, places, and things. So the officer knew that I was telling the truth. And the only time they've ever thought I was telling the truth, but he knew in that moment I was telling the truth. And they wrote it up as a misdemeanor. Drug court gave me, I got a sanction for it. But thank the good Lord they did not lock me down. But they gave me a sanction for it, and I had a huge fine. But I knew that when I got out of jail the day that I was going to have to do something different. So I called a guy that I worked with at the motel, and him and his wife and five kids, came and got me and my stuff from that dope house. And I went and stayed in their two-bedroom apartment. And because that's called willingness, you got to be willing. And I was willing. I wanted something different. And I didn't know what I was doing at this time, y'all. I just knew that I was doing it. And all I can tell you is it was God. It was God taking me. Because, you know, every time you move forward, you got to turn around and you got to look and see what God has done. Every few steps you take, you got to see what God has done for you so that you don't forget. Because we are so human that, you know, we tend to get full of ourselves sometimes and we just forget. So we must turn around and look and see how far God has brought us, even if it's just a few steps, just to see. And so we can continue to be grateful for how far he takes us. And so anyway, I stayed there. And so the next Sunday rolls around and I want to get back to that church. And so I'm living in these apartments and they were all gone to a Thanksgiving dinner. And so I had $10 in my name and I really wanted to get back to that church. And I didn't know anybody, but I thought, well, I could go knock on the door and just ask somebody if they would take me down to this church and I could give them $5 for gas. So I decided that's what I was going to do. So I went next door and this lady had her two little girls. She said, yes, let me get done. We'll run you down there. So they took me down to the church and dropped me off. I hitchhiked back and forth to church for a while. So, like I said, I had $10 to my name. I gave her $5 for gas. So I had $5 left. And back then I smoked cigarettes. So I had a choice. I could buy me a pack of cigarettes, which I knew that I was going to need them cigarettes or, but my heart really wanted to give that money to the church. So when in church that morning, Pastor Lisa says, I need four people with $5 to come to the altar. So here, me and my $5 ended up at that altar. I don't even know how I got there. I was there so quick. And what they were trying to teach me was that when you give to God, how God gives to you. So I walked into church with $5 that Sunday and walked out with $25. And, you know, and God knew that that was all the money that I had. And what God, they was teaching me that when you give to God, how God gives to you. But what God was teaching me was that, baby, if you just keep taking these steps, I'm going to take care of you. If you just keep going, I'm going to take care of you. And so drug court sent me to treatment after that. So I went to drug court. Well, I went to treatment when I was a couple months sober. So, you know, all I knew then was that I was just doing it. I was just staying clean and sober and going to these meetings. Treatment helped me a lot, taught me a lot of things I did need to know about what I needed to do to try to stay sober. And then when I got out, I went to a sober living because here I am homeless, right? Still homeless and living with these people and go to treatment. So then I have to find somewhere to go when I leave treatment. And so the Lord opened up a door to a sober living. They accepted me with no money. And so it was just so wild how God made the way and how God just kept opening the doors for me to have somewhere to go. So I went to this sober living and stayed there for a couple months. And then I got my own place to live. And that was one of the scariest moments of my sobriety. But in the meantime, I got a job working at a Subway that I was not happy with, making $7.25 an hour. But I had to be grateful for what God had given me in that moment. And I had to learn how to be grateful for that $7.25 an hour. But I did. I remember hearing something. I can't remember something I read or something I heard, but I remember this guy saying that he would thank God every day for his job and he would do it because he hated his job and he would do it over and over every day until he learned how to love his job. And so that's what I started doing. I started thanking God for my job every day. But most of all, I would thank God for the ability to do my job because I really loved the fact that I could get up and go to work every day. And so needless to say, I'm still there at that job today, and that is my store today. And so God has brought me a long way with that. And what, you know, when I tell this part of my story, it's because people don't understand just what it means to be grateful and how God can build you and use you where you are. Even if it's not where you want to be, if you're still thank God and be grateful for what God has given you, He will give you more. It doesn't have to be in that one place, but He can move you higher and higher, but you must be grateful for what He has given you already. And so anyway, so after, when I was about 30 days sober, I reached out to my son, and he absolutely hated me. And all those years of me being out there, and I used to think over and over and over, you know, the only thing that was keeping me from my kids was my using. If I could just quit, I could see my kids. If I could just quit, you know. And so here I am. I'm clean and I'm sober, right? So I should get to see my kids. Well, that's not quite how it works. Because we suddenly forget about all the destruction that we caused. And we feel like, you know, because sometimes when you first get sober, you feel like you need a pat on the back because you're clean and sober. And you feel like that everything should come right back to you. And what I do know is I've seen everything come back to people, and I've seen them turn around and lose it. So, but what I do know is I reached out to my son, and he hated me, and I could not understand why he hated me. I went through a lot of tears and disappointments with this process. And his father had given me his phone number because they were no longer speaking. And so I would text him, and I would text him every birthday, every holiday. Merry Christmas. I love you. Happy birthday. You would be so proud of me. You know, I would send him pictures occasionally. And y'all, this went on for 3 years. For 3 years, he hated me and would not have anything to do with me. But I just kept being persistent. I just kept going. I just kept trying and not giving up. And I remember the prayer I prayed. God, I'm at a wall with my son. And I don't know, Lord, I don't know what else to do. So, Lord, if there's anything that you know, please show me what to do. Because, Lord, I don't know. And it wasn't long after that he put it on my heart so heavy to go by his grandparents' house. And so one night they lived between Boomblanc or Tublanc Corinth. So one night I was heading up that way, and I said, if the light's on, I'm going to stop. And these are people that I did not want to ever face again. Because what would they think of me? What would they say to me? I pictured them being so mean to me and hateful, and they were not hateful people, but I was a mother who had abandoned her children and for years. And so what would they think of me, and what would they say to me, and just all those things that the enemy wants you to feel. And so, but God had put it on my heart so heavy that I knew that I had to stop. And so I stopped and knocked on the door, and she said she knew the minute I opened the door that I was different. And so they actually invited me into their home and sat me down, and they told me about my son, and they told me how he had been all these years. And they was extremely honest with me and told me exactly how he felt about me. And that he did not want anything to do with me. He called me Laura. He did not call me Mama. You know, they told me about his girlfriend. They told me about the whole nine yards. But they would not tell me where he was or how to get in touch with him, because they did not want him. They did not want to do anything behind his back because they knew how he felt about me. But what they did tell me is that he was getting my text messages. And he had been getting them for the last 3 years. Every text message. She called one out to me. His mama sat there and called one out to me that I had just seen him days before. And, you know, that just put a fire in my soul. And I just, you know what I did? I just stepped up my game. So when I left there that night, I text my son. And the next morning, I text my son. 2 or 3 times a day, I text my son. Every single day after that, I text my son. And this went on for months until one night I sit on my bed and I was like, I just picked up my phone and I just said, I love you. And I got a text back and it said, I love you too. Just out of the blue. And it would take a couple more months and he would agree to meet me. And on October the 13th of 2018, God gave me my son back. God gave me my son back 100%, gave me my son back. And when I tell this part of my story, what I really want people to see is that you don't give up. You know, even no matter what the wall looks like, you got to keep trying, and you got to be persistent, because that's what the word tells us to do, is to persevere and to be persistent and to give up. And this is where I learned how to pray. This is where my relationship with God started, because I needed God to do something for me. I'm not ashamed to say that today, because today it's not what I need God to do for me. It's what I can do for him. But when my relationship started, it was because I needed, but God knew what it would take to get me to Him. And so what one of my favorite parts of this story is we were reunited in October. In December, I found out I was going to be a Mimi. So God waited to put my son back in my life to make me a grandma. And so in December, I found out I was going to be a Mimi. In July 2019, I got to be in the delivery room when she was born. And her name is Paisley May, and she is the ruler of my world. She is the best thing. And I'm going to tell you, I now have a grandson as well. My grandson is now 3 months old, but my son. And so when God says that He will give you a double portion, that's what He will do, because He gave me my son. He gave me a daughter-in-law. He gave me two grandbabies. So God gave me my double portion. And I'm going to tell you what God does with those little babies. It's God restores those moments that I lost with my children. Because that's one thing that I struggle with so much when I got clean and sober, was I could never get those moments back that I lost with my kids. I could never get those moments back with my babies. And I'm going to tell you what, though, God has given them back to me. God continues to give them back to me. Every time that little girl looks at me and says, "That way you made me." Every time she kisses me, every time she lays on my bed at night and throws her arm over me and says, "I'm so glad you my Mimi," because she loves me. And God shows me, God gives that back to me through my grandbabies. So when I was a year sober, I reached out to my two daughters, and I knew it was going to be a much more difficult situation. And I had to get an attorney. And God provided that attorney too, because I didn't have any money. But I had to get an attorney. I had to find them. And they served them papers, so that I knew it was a shot in the dark. I knew it was a much more difficult situation. So I tried to file to get some kind of visitation with them. And I got served back with papers to terminate my rights. And in this moment was probably, this is one of the moments where I just wanted to quit. And I really didn't want to face it, because I didn't know how to face adversity. I didn't know how to face the trials. But one thing God had taught me was, God had taught me how to pray. And this is where God taught me His word, because through this process with my daughters, I learned how to open up this word right here. And I learned, because I was desperate, because I knew I was fighting a losing battle at this point. But God had given me so much hope, because I opened up His word every day. And how I found was, I would get out my Google and I would Google verses for God's restoration. And I would open up my word and I would highlight those verses. Joel 2:25, "I will restore to you all the years the locusts had eaten." That's just one. And then I would Google verses for hope, and verses for courage, and verses for fighting battles. And what I found out is what I needed to find out the most, and that was, God was fighting for me, because He told me over and over in His word that He was fighting for me. And day after day, as I sit on my bed and I look out that window, when me and God would talk about this every single day, we would talk about this, and every day God would give me new promises of hope out of His word. And I would go back each day and I would remind God of His promises to me, of God, of what He had said in His word. I would learn it, and then I would go back and I would remind God of what He was saying to me in His word. And through me doing this day after day, God was building me up. He was giving me all this power, this hope, you know, that. So, yeah, God's going to give me my girls back. You know, God's going to do this for me. I was excited. You know, God was going to do this for me. Couldn't tell me anything different. God was going to do this for me. And because he told me in His word, "I will restore to you." He told me over and over in His word, "For with God, nothing shall be impossible." You know, He told me, "I am fighting for you." He told me, "Do not be afraid." He told me, "I will go before you." You know, He tells me all these things. So, and over in this situation, this went on for 3 years as well. The court would get put off and get put off. And I would be like, "Oh, God's just working on them." You know, because of course I was ready, right? I was ready. So God was just working on them, right? Well, right before I went to court, I sat down on the side of that bed and I looked out that window, the same window I fought this battle out through day after day after day, as he was building me up with his word, and God had changed my heart. In here, it talks about how Jesus, on his way to be crucified, he went up to the hill of Gethsemane to pray. And he asked God if it was possible, if he would take the cup from him, so that, because he knew what he was about to face. And then he said, but if not, your will be done. And that day I sat on the side of my bed crying, and I asked God, and I meant it. It's easy to pray for God's will. It's hard to pray for God's will and mean it. But I prayed that God's will would be done. No matter what happened, I just prayed that he would give me the strength to walk it out. No matter what. Because God had already given me his promises. And God keeps his promises. So no matter how it went at court, because God still gave me his promises. And I know that God is faithful, because God has taught me that through his word, that he is faithful in all things. And God works all things together for the good. So God changed me. God had changed me through this battle, through this fight of my daughters. He changed everything about me. And this is where he built me. This is where he built my faith. And he's still building my faith. I went to court in August of 2019, and I was reunited with my two daughters. And just so y'all know, my son and I was reunited after 9 years of being apart. And me and my two daughters was reunited after 10 years of being apart. And I got to hug them and kiss them and love them. And it was beautiful. And I had to sign my rights over to my two girls. Not because I lost my rights, but because they asked me to. God told me to trust him that day. And that's what I'm doing. I'm trusting God. And that was the hardest thing I'd ever. That's something I swear I would never do as well. But there comes to a point where we have to quit being so selfish. And it's just my consequences. God has already told me what he's going to do in my life. He's already told me. That's why it's so important to open this thing up and read it, because God will tell you what he's going to do in your life, what he's got to plan. And it will not be what it looks like to you. It will not be what you want it to look like. It's going to be better if we just hold on and if we just continue to walk it out and fight the battle. Now, God has given me some good moments with my girls since that day. I actually got a couple of visits with them after that. Where I actually got to go like watch one play ball and one play softball. It's been a very difficult situation. And after COVID, it was just, there was nothing else. And now they don't want anything to do with me. They have no contact with me. And I could go into detail about that, but it's not for me to point fingers or accuse or say anything about it. It's for me to trust God in his process. But what I can tell you is that I continue to try, just like I did with my son. I continue to reach out. I continue to go forth when God tells me to go forth. I continue to try to have a relationship with them. And a few weeks ago, I went to a funeral and they were there. They live off, but some of their family still lives nearby. And I went to a funeral and I seen them there. And I broke after that funeral. And I said, God, you know, God, it looks so impossible. It just looks so impossible. I don't know how you're going to do it. But I trust that you're going to do it. And yesterday, I got to go watch my oldest daughter graduate college. And I was not invited, but I was told about the graduation. And so I drove all the way to Mobile, Alabama. And I didn't get to have any contact with them. But I got to sit on a bleacher. And I got to look at her and wave at her. And I got a beautiful smile from my daughter. and a wave. And that may seem like so little to some people, but I would drive 4.5 hours again just to get one more smile, just so they would know that I'm not giving up, because God has not given me a spirit of fear, but of power and of love and of a sound mind. And He has given me strength and courage to keep fighting this battle. And just recently, I found myself in the Bible as Sarah. Sarah and Abraham waited 25 years for their promise. What seemed so impossible, God made possible. And just like Sarah held on to her promise, I continue to hang on to my promise that God has given me. And I also find myself in Luke 1:45. It says, "Blessed is she who has believed that the Lord would fulfill His promises to her." So every day I wake up expecting, because one day God's going to restore everything about my life. And until then, I'll just keep trusting Him. And I'm going to close. Just going to read. This is my testimony poem I wrote. Kind of sums it all up. It says, "For so long I lived in darkness, hiding from my shame, drinking all my tears away and numbing all my pain. I was so lost and alone and too weak to fight. The only time I could see my kids was when I went to sleep at night. We laughed and we played until morning came, and then I'd wake up once again to face the pain. On the inside, I was dying, and on the outside, withering away. I no longer knew that girl that I saw in the mirror each day. Although I didn't know where the real me had gone, God knew the whole time, yet He never left me alone. He took me by the hand, and He wiped away my tears. He gave me hope, and I gave Him my fears. He took me from that darkness and put me in a better place. I stand here right now, saved by His amazing grace." Thank y'all.